Invisible Cities by Italo Calvino. Cities and Memory 3. In vain, great-hearted Kublai, shall I attempt to describe Zyra, city of high bastions? I could tell you how many steps make up the streets rising like stairways, and the degree of the arcade's curves, and what kind of zinc scales cover the roofs. But I already know this would be the same as telling you nothing. The city does not consist of this, but of relationships between the measurements of its space and the events of its past, the height of a lamppost and the distance from the ground of a hanged usurper's swaying feet, the line strung from the lamppost to the railing opposite, and the festoons that decorate the course of the queen's nuptial procession, the height of that railing and the leap of the adulterer who climbed over it at dawn, the tilt of a guttering and a cat's progress along it as he slips into the same window, the firing range of a gunboat which has suddenly appeared beyond the cape, and the bomb that destroys the guttering, the rips in the fishnet, and the three old men seated on the dock mending nets and telling each other for the 100th time the story of the gunboat of the usurper, who some say was the queen's illegitimate son, abandoned in his swaddling clothes there on the dock. As this wave from memories flows in, the city soaks it up like a sponge and expands. A description of Zyra as it is today should contain all of Zyra's past. The city, however, does not tell its past, but contains it like the lines of a hand written in the corners of the streets, the gratings of the windows, the banisters of the steps, the antennae of the lightning rods, the poles of the flags, every segment marked in turn with scratches, indentations, scrolls. Dawn had broken when he said, "Sire, now I have told you about all the cities I know. There is still one of which you never speak." Marco Polo bowed his head. "Venice," the Khan said. Marco smiled. "What else do you believe I have been talking to you about?" The Emperor did not turn a hair. "And yet I have never heard you mention that name." And Polo said, "Every time I describe a city, I am saying something about Venice." "When I ask you about other cities, I want to hear about them, and about Venice when I ask you about Venice." To distinguish the other city's qualities, I must speak of a first city that remains implicit. For me, it is Venice. You should then begin each tale of your travels from the departure, describing Venice as it is, all of it, not omitting anything you remember of it. The lake's surface was barely wrinkled. The copper reflection of the ancient palace of the Sung was shattered into sparkling glints like floating leaves. "Memory's images, once they are fixed in words, are erased," Polo said. "Perhaps I am afraid of losing Venice all at once if I speak of it. Or perhaps, speaking of other cities, I have already lost it, little by little." Hidden Cities 1. In Olinda, if you go out with a magnifying glass and hunt carefully, you may find somewhere a point no bigger than the head of a pin which, if you look at it slightly enlarged, reveals within itself the roofs, the antennas, the skylights, the gardens, the pools, the streamers across the streets, the kiosks in the squares, the horse racing track. That point does not remain there. A year later, you will find it the size of half a lemon, then as large as a mushroom, then a soup plate. And then it becomes a full-size city, enclosed within the earlier city, a new city that forces its way ahead in the earlier city and presses its way toward the outside.